Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 9th of April, recording at 8:52 p.m., and that's British Summer Time, and what a summery day it's been. Now, first the highlights here for the last week, because this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. Now, in stock markets, you could say that we had a sort of minor midweek wobble, but they've ended on a strong footing. And Asia generally steady today. The European markets show some solid gains, all over 1%. Well, I see Sweden isn't, but it's up nearly 1%. And gains as high as 2.87% for the Spanish IBEX index. And the Americas generally steady. I noticed that Brazil is down a little bit, but it's been on a bit of a barnstormer recently. And there's a wee bit of profit taking there today. The other Americas are steady. Nothing spectacular, but Wall Street with a few minutes to go is currently near the highs of the day. The S&P up 7. Now, in long-dated government bonds, we have seen a dramatic week for the Greek bonds. Yields getting up to 7.5%. They're down today, but still up over 7%. And the European government bond indices have generally been easier. We saw sort of a sharp fall in the bunds today. Now, U.S. Treasury is perhaps a little bit steadier, including today, but these are not strong patterns. I'm talking about futures, which means that yields are pressing upwards. And precious metals, here we've seen some really good action, led by palladium and platinum, which have extended advances well into new high ground, and that includes today, with palladium breaking up above the $500 level. Actually, it did that yesterday, but it's at 514, very strong. Platinum at 1730 as I speak. Gold is at $1,161.80. That's up $11, over $11. So this is good action here overall. Silver up to 1840. And the US dollar, not surprisingly against that background, well, I think the dollar has helped to contribute to the strength in the precious metals, but the US dollar has wobbled. Here, the dollar index, although it still shows an overall ranging upward trend, remember that the weak euro and sterling are the biggest constituents there. The dollar index is down just under the 81 level. The Australian dollar, that was interesting because Australia hiked rates again, taking short-term interest rates up to 8.25. And the highest, I believe, among developed countries. And that is pressing up against the higher side of a broad trading range against the U.S. dollar. And the yen, well, it's been a little bit firmer this week, but it had been quite weak in the previous three or four weeks. Industrial metals, generally firm overall. Aluminium is one of the stronger ones. I haven't looked too much at the soft commodities this week. There's been so much else going on, but it seems to be a fairly sort of mixed picture overall. That's not where the big action is. The big action is in the stock markets and the industrial commodities once again. Okay, so what's going to happen here? What can we conclude from all of these trends? Well, first off, everything that I've said and that Owen has said about stock market action since those February reaction of lows, which I just described on several occasions as a moment of truth, because we had seen a lot of ranging and drifting, and the major stock markets had, for the most part, reverted to the trend mean represented by the rising 200-day moving averages. It was a moment of truth because in a cyclical bull market, one would expect them to rebound off those levels with a steady rally, show some upward dynamics and a good rally. Conversely, if they had ranged laterally through those rising moving averages, that would have been more worrying, indicating further sideways ranging at best, and quite possibly a more significant correction. But as you know, that didn't happen, and the strong upward dynamics and rebound did occur, and the charts have been amazingly consistent ever since. Now, again, that is, excuse me, that is classic bull market action reconfirming the overall upward trends. Now, that's the good news. In the short term, a minor negative is that we have overbought conditions, but these markets have been running with short-term overbought conditions for several weeks. And to put events in perspective, if you had months and months of sideways ranging, none of us should ever be surprised to see a fairly explosive move once that range is completed with a breakout, either to the upside or to the downside. And of course, these were pretty much to the upside. Greece and one or two other stock markets accepted, but overall, we've had a high degree of commonality here in terms of a good overall performance. Now, the fuller money themes have remained strong, but the European and North American markets have also been very firm overall. The Eastern, in European, that's, I should say, the Central European and the Eastern European leaders, markets such as Poland, for instance, have been very, 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 very strong. So again, good confirming bullish action, but we do have this short-term overbought condition now in the markets. So no one can be surprised if we spill over into a bit of a consolidation. I don't think that we're likely to see another correction anytime soon. I think it's still too soon for that. Now I say that with a little voice in my ear saying, "What about the sell in May and go away adage?" Well, February was a good month in stock markets after that, the early February lows. March was an extremely good month in terms of stock market performance. And April's ahead of the game here on the 9th. So if we have a strong month of April, it would hardly be surprising if we saw some profit taking in May and June. But will that be a huge blowout or just a minor correction? Well, it depends how far markets go on the upside, in my view. And remember, while sell in May and go away has been a useful adage more often than not, just think, it just certainly didn't work last year, did it? So there's nothing sacrosanct about it. I'm content to be long here. I'm not wanting to chase markets to the upside. And I've emphasized over and over again that if you have upward trending markets, and if the indices are to the right of their trend mean represented by the, if you have upward trending stock market indices, and if they remain to the left of their trend mean represented by the rising 200-day moving averages, then the optimum buy points, although it takes a little courage, are when you see mean reversions towards the 200-day moving average. Those are the pullback phases usually, although they can also achieve that horizontally. But usually that occurs. Those mean testings usually occur on corrections. If you look at weekly charts in the library and look at the last bull market cycle from sort of 2003 on into 2007, you can see exactly what I'm talking about. And seeing a picture of it is the best way to view it in perspective. Depending on which stock market you're looking at, we saw at least two or three corrections to the mean before the final bull run peaks were registered. Well, we've seen a couple so far. One was in July of 2009. And the other one was in February of this year. And there's a lot of underlying support to keep these markets in overall upward trends. So yes, we're a little bit overbought, a little bit overextended, but we're not wildly, speculatively, ludicrously overextended. And while sentiment has inevitably improved somewhat, there are a lot of people who are also fairly nervous about this rally overall and who have not fully participated. It's had, in other words, a wall of worry element to it, and I regard that as positive action generally. Now, in terms of key indicators, things to worry about, long-dated government bond yields, I said that they're pressing the upper sides of their ranges, but they are not breaking sharply higher, at least not yet. I do think they will break sharply higher because at some point we have the contagion fears from Greece. However, if that is somehow papered over or resolved, or Greece is given enough money to end the short to medium term crisis, then that would help bond yields perhaps to remain elsewhere, to remain in their ranges for a little while longer. But everybody knows they don't represent great value. Everyone knows they don't represent great value. Everyone knows that the supply of bonds that are being offered is enormous, and that's going to continue with these indebted OECD countries for the foreseeable future. And everyone knows that it has required quantitative easing, a nice technical term for governments buying their own paper, to keep yields from backing up. So at some point, and it's not even worth guessing as to exactly when this is going to occur because there are too many variables and no one knows. We'll see it on the charts. But at some point, we will see yields marching higher. And when we get US and UK 10-year long-dated government bond yields, which are hovering in the 4% region or a little lower, when we get them up above 5%, 5.5%, that will represent a very strong headwind for equities. But that hasn't happened yet. So we can sleep at night in terms of what those yields are actually doing. But all good stories in markets, all good trends come to an end, as we know. And that's why I have emphasized repeatedly in these audios, make hay while the sun shines. And the sun is shining, figuratively and literally in London for the last 2 days, at any rate, and I gather many other places of interest. Okay, on to other potential warning signs. Crude oil did break up out of its trading range. That was either late last week or earlier this week, and that has caused a lot of commentary about how it was going to go to $100. I think Goldman Sachs have said that. I wonder if it's the same analyst who said that gold was going to go to $200 by the end of 2008 when it was up in the $130, $140, fuller $40 region. Well, whatever. Could it happen? Yes. Should it happen? Well, that's more debatable, because it's not as if there's a shortage of crude oil around, and natural gas prices remain exceptionally competitive, and the various renewable forms of energy have been gradually but steadily making inroads into the demand for crude oil. But crude oil is still by far the most important source of energy, as you know. So the bias has to be said is to the upside, in line with this firming tone for the global economy, led by what has been a booming Asia, booming Central America, strong in developed country resources economies, not least in Australia, and a gradually improving picture among the OECD countries. So that's a recipe for increased energy consumption. So that can put some upward pressure. I think what concerns me most of all, though, is that there's quite a bit of speculation going on in these commodity markets. And you've seen the surging precious metals this week. That's not going to cause any problems for oil directly, but it does affect the psychology. So if a number of hedge fund managers, and well, we've had pension fund managers buy these things as well, if they say, look how well gold is doing, look how well the industrial metals are doing, we should have some crude oil trackers as well, speculative demand can easily muscle the oil price higher. And to offset this prospect, I think at the moment I would say it's a question of not will oil go up, but when. And that's been pretty much the case all along, but I have been hoping that it would stay in its range for quite some time. Of course, crude oil market doesn't care what I've been hoping, but I've also pointed out that there are some factors such as I've just mentioned, natural gas, shale gas, etc., which could keep oil in check for somewhat longer. But at the moment, we have really got to say that the, or I will say that the genie is out of the bottle in terms of higher crude oil prices, and that we would need to see them move back down below the $80 level to discourage that speculative activity, and to indicate that the range trading was going to be extended, or in other words, leading to more sideways activity rather than trending to the upside. But at today's price, and crude oil is just below the $85 a barrel level, and the dollar is softening, so that's not a problem today. But it's it well it, when I say that, I need to qualify it a little bit in terms of countries and regions. For instance, the Asian currencies are generally stronger, so $85 a barrel oil is not making any impact there, because their currencies have been pushing up against the dollar. That is, the currencies that are not pegged against the greenback. One of the stronger ones recently has been the Indian rupee, and therefore that's helping to offset the rising cost of oil in dollars. But sterling has been really quite weak, so that does increase the cost of petrol in the UK, but not so much as all the absurd taxes that have been piled on it by the government. Okay, what else to mention as a as a factor that could cause problems. Well, in the past, I've often talked about the U.S. dollar, but it's been generally steady against most of the OECD currencies, and has a ranging to slightly downward bias against the freely traded Asian currencies and also the resources currencies. If you want strong currencies, they're the resources currencies, led by the Australian dollar, and they're the freely traded emerging market, Asian emerging market currencies. Some of the Latin American currencies are reasonably steady. Brazil real, I'm thinking of here. That's the main one. Now, what else to mention? Where are these precious metals going to go? The biases is certainly upwards. I think the chart activity looks very encouraging. If I have a concern, it is that palladium, which is the current leader, and you know, using commonality as we teach at the chart seminar, I'm always very interested in commonality indications. When you have a sector that's where the individual components are strongly related, as is the case with precious metals, an increasing number of investors regard them all as safe stores of value, hard money to some, and they also have some overlapping industrial uses and jewelry uses as well. So a high degree of commonality among precious metals. And with any sector that has this high degree of commonality, technically, I think it's a very, very good idea to identify the leaders, because the leaders tend to lead in both directions. And we've seen it over and over again. Veteran subscribers will be extremely familiar with this, so apologies for the review, but we also have newer subscribers for which this may not be as familiar a concept. Palladium is the front runner in here, closely followed by platinum. So I feel that we will see a loss of upside momentum, or maybe we will get something handed to us on a platter, such as an eventual downward dynamic by palladium and platinum, before we see the highs, may only be a few days before, but before we see the highs for this move in gold and silver. And that's what has so often been the case in the past. Now, if I have one concern, and it's not a big one at this stage, that is that the palladium is becoming overextended once again relative to its rising 200-day moving average. But unlike in January, when it saw a peak prior to a correction within the overall upward trend, unlike in January, it's better underpinned by all the consolidation that has taken place in the first 3 months of this year. So I think it's a question of, do we get a short-term reaction and consolidation in palladium and platinum in the relatively short term? Choice between that, or do we get a bit of a bandwagon effect on the upside? I don't know the answer to that, but the charts will show us. I'd rather see the bandwagon effect, because that would make it easier to play trailing stops in all precious metals. We look for a loss of momentum, let alone downward dynamics, eventually in the platinum and palladium, and then book some trading profits in gold and silver in anticipation of another correction. Meanwhile, I've been leveraging up in gold, and the technical action is terrific. The seasonal factors are still favorable for a little while longer, and I really don't see any reason why it shouldn't take out that January high. and December, January high, and it could do that. Could do that relatively soon. So this is a very interesting time here for the precious metals. What about the precious metal shares? Well, they remain serial laggards here, but they are moving up, and they may stage a catch-up move at some point. It's possible. I don't know. I always prefer the metal myself, but I have both. As you know, I'm overweight in gold in my trading account relative to other positions. I'm overweight gold shares in my equity portfolio. And if we see another good strong move to the upside, such as I've indicated is possible, if we get gold repeating what we've seen it do following its breakouts in September 2005 and September 2007 to the upside, then we could easily see something in the $1,300 to $1,400 region. So that's attractive in terms of potential. And if we do see that, I will certainly want to be nailing down some gold share profits and some gold bullion. Bullion profits. Meanwhile, it's still a case of, again, of, to repeat myself, make hay while the sun shines in that and so many other industrial and precious metal related and equity related moves generally. And what about Japan? Japan is a sleeper relative to some of the other markets that are moving. Have a look at Owen's section today. It really, really is interesting. He's done some wonderful work there, and look at Japan on a price to book basis, and you'll see charts going back to 1990 or just before 1990. And the Japanese second section is selling at about a third of what the S&P 500 is selling on a price to book. I think the S&P 500 is at 2.7, 2.8 times book. It's 0.74 something on the 0.74 something on the Japanese section, second section. I think the Japanese first section, that would be the TOPIX index, is I think that's trading at sort of 1.38, so almost 100 basis points below what the S&P is trading at. And these are coming off, these price to book levels are coming off record lows that were reached back in around March of 2009. And they're still historically very, very low. Certainly relative to Japan, and they're also low today relative to Wall Street, and I suspect most other stock markets, but we don't have that data for most stock markets. But it is extremely important for Japan because that's not the easiest market in which to assess fundamental values, and we think that price to book is the key indication for that. Those charts are in the library. Just search under book and you'll see those, but Owen has also posted them here today. And I think that we'll probably upgrade Japan to a cyclical fuller money theme, which it certainly hasn't been for a very, very long time. I think it's an extremely interesting situation overall. We do need to see the weaker yen. Owen's also got that chart on an overlay with either the topics of the Nikkei, and there's a high correlation there. Weaker yen, the stock market does better because it's an export-led market. That's an obvious point. Okay, so interesting times. And good weather, at least over here, and I hope it is for wherever you happen to reside, and I also hope you have a splendid weekend. Meanwhile, all the best.